I was going to say something, but I better just do that off air. Not on air. I'll tell you something about afterwards.
No, you can say anything you like. Yeah. It cuts
we'll
out.
Cut it. I can't.
Go on. Shall we say my wife right before the exams?
I'm leaving it in.
Yeah.
I'm leaving it
in. Stays there.
You can leave that bit in. That's the
scene. Please like, subscribe, comment, and hit the notification bell for any future videos. Well, we were up and running because people won't notice about you, Michael, which is I do, is you are one of the very few people who has done the knowledge fully twice.
Yep.
And also our cab driver in Brighton.
Yeah. Well, I got my badge originally in 1977. Let's go back a bit. I was a police officer. Knocked off a motorcycle in 1975. I thought, am I going to get better? Don't know. Started doing the knowledge originally as a form of insurance. Realised I wasn't going to get any better. And then in July, I think it was, 1977, I asked them to retire me on ill health grounds, which they did. Mm-hmm. And I became a cab driver just after the Queen's Silver Jubilee.
1977?
77, yeah.
So give us the story, because you have a unique perspective of the knowledge then to the knowledge when you did it in the early
2000s? 2004.
Early 2000s.
Not long after you started.
No, no. Well, I started in 96, so yes, 8 years into that. And but I know me and you have known each other for 20 years now.
Yeah, exactly.
So
two years of me coming backwards and forwards and saying, what about so-and-so and so-and-so? Well, I think coming backwards and forwards, you used to send me stuff in the post in the old days.
Yeah, because you was away then. But what can you tell these people today about the difference between the 77 knowledge to the 2004 knowledge?
Okay, Well, I can tell you the difference between 77, 2004 and today's ones. Mm-hmm. 77, you had 486 or 468, I can't remember the figures.
468.
And you...
Oh, runs, just in case they didn't. Yeah, 468 runs in 1977.
You started up, you signed on, you paid your 5 shillings, and you went up into Upper Street and got a photograph done, and you're waiting at my house to Gibson Square.
What did you pay the 5 shillings for?
Photograph.
Oh, that was the only expense, wasn't it? The expense was
the photograph. Yeah, the only photograph. That's all you paid. So you paid that, and you'd come back 104 days.
Yeah.
And then usually, nearly always, you got down to 56s.
Yeah.
And you kept going. What used to happen is you start doing the runs, page by page, and you go up, and they'd ask you questions based on different runs, different places. And always they'd find something, well, I'm going to do that next week. Well, they always get to that point. Mm-hmm. But you kept there. And you got your 21s, 14s in those days.
14s, I did 14s.
28s, 21s, 14s. And then eventually, I think it was Mr. Miller turned me, said, you now passed. Mm-hmm. Do the suburbs. So I did the suburbs. I couldn't get a badge straight away because I was in the police force still at that time. Mm-hmm. Changes then. And so I went to see the CMO, Chief Medical Officer, and said, retire me out. He did. Became a cab driver. First job I ever had, I picked the cab up from London General, manual.
Yeah.
My left foot, boy.
Yeah.
My left leg was that.
People don't know, do they?
Bloody hell. And the steering wheel, you had to have arms like bloody Arnold Schwarzenegger to turn those things. Yeah. Well, Popeye'd afterwards. So depends what you're doing at the time, really. So we'd did the driving test, and first job, got all the way from London General Cab Company right to Victoria, picked up my first job, who went to the West London Air Terminal. Dave, do you know where the West London Air Terminal is?
No.
Is it Battersea Heliport?
Nope.
Wait, West London Air Terminal?
West London Air Terminal. They used to have a bus service that went from West London all the way to Heathrow.
And it was called the West London
Air Terminal. It's where Sainsbury's is, in Cromwell Road.
Well, what's that then? What, where Sainsbury's is in
Cromwell Road now was the West London Air Terminal. And they used to have double-decker buses towing a trailer. All the luggage went in the trailers, and they'd off down the airport. My very first fare ever.
Yeah, was that one. Well, you gave it for free, that one?
Yeah, I did.
West London Terminal. Well, can you tell us how long that took?
A lot less than now.
Yes.
A lot less time than now.
In 77?
Yeah, hardly anything. And then gradually I bought my own cab. I commuted part of my pension, bought my own cab, joined London Wire as it was then. 2 days after I bought my cab, I was on London Wire, and they're digging holes into it. I think, and went on London Wire. I was quick on the button.
What's London Wire? Was that one of the radio circuits?
One of the radio circuits. You had Lords.
I never heard of that one.
Lords, Mount View.
Yep, Mount View I heard of.
Yeah, London Wide became Comcab or Computer Cab. I had sort of 4 years, I ran everywhere, used to go south of the water. South of the water, mate, no, yep. Right, yep. North, south, east, west, didn't care where I went. And people said, well, there's no work down there. I said, you're lucky. I said, well, do you put your light on when you go down there? Oh, no, put your light on. I have, in my time, certainly even in those days, I've worked Upminster, Uxbridge, Edgware, East Croydon, Bromley, nearly all of the Richmond. Richmond is a very good one.
Yeah, Richmond, still okay.
All the suburban ranks of a night time, if there was empty, if there's no cabs there, I just work and take the punters. Do you know where you're going yet? Tell me where you're going, then fine. Or look it up. No GPSs in those days. I didn't care where I went. And I worked on the basis that if I can, I keep going back until a yellow badge came up. Because I can work anywhere, they can't. Yep. So that's what I thought. Well,
I didn't mind when the yellow badge came back. I carried them. Well, if there's a rank and it's full of people in the station, I still kept on picking them up. You done it?
I mean, no. What's that?
Have you never worked a suburban rank?
No.
They're all London ranks.
Yeah, I know, but what am I doing out there? I'd live in London. And
no, you get a fare in town and they say, I want to go to Richmond.
Goes out there.
So it goes to Richmond. You go past Richmond and you set them off. And as you go past the station, there's 500 people standing outside the station at night thinking, where's the cab? I would always pull on and say, I don't know where you want to go, but you tell me and I'll take it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, like the O2 or something.
One night in modern times, since I've been back, I got to Richmond. The locals didn't want the job. They went to Carshalton. Then on to somewhere else, Sutton, and then back down to Kingston.
And why wouldn't they not want it up?
Well, they didn't know it was going to three different places. Oh. Yellow badge for Richmond. What are they going to do way out in the sticks? I can do anywhere.
Yeah.
So, lovely little job that was that night. Anyway, that's the history. So back to the history.
Yeah.
After 4 years or so, I got bored. I wanted a different mental challenge. And I took a printing franchise in Gosport in Hampshire.
Yeah.
Built it up over 10 years or so. Lost everything in the recession of the 90s, 80s rather. Built it up again on my own and lost everything in the recession of the 90s. I had two major clients who went bust taking me with them. Mm-hmm. I was doing all right. And I thought, what do I do? Come back to the cab trade.
Yep.
I let my London license lapse. No good that. So I thought, what do I do? I did the knowledge for Brighton, which takes 5 months.
Yeah.
Drove a Brighton cab for 6 years in total, the last 2.5 years of which is when I redid knowledge and met you the first time. And the difference is that in Brighton, there's a lot of young people who don't have life skills and you're not treated with the respect a London cab driver gets. Apart from which, for every £2 they take, I take three.
Yeah.
Still in contact with the drivers that are down there. Got a very good friend of mine down there, guy I first drove for. So I came back. Up and down. I was working 5 nights a week. I would, on a Monday, I'd finish my Sunday night shift. I'd come up on the Tuesday to my call of a partner, Tuesday afternoon, when I'd woken up. And that would be, he was in Thornton Heath. That goes Steve Meffam.
I remember Steve.
Steve, a very good guy. He's now out in Thailand.
Oh,
Has been for over 10 years. I'd come up. We'd do callovers on a very strict basis of time, not how many runs can you do. 15 minutes, and it was very much business-like. I'd come up on the Wednesday. I would have pre-prepared my runs. I'd spend 8-9 hours doing runs from, 5 o'clock in the morning. I'd leave, go down to Steve's 5:30, 6 o'clock in the evening, and leave there, gone 10 o'clock. We'd call over again. And then the rest of the week, I would be at my computer at home, preparing runs for the following week and then coming up and calling up. And I used to put them into little booklets.
I remember you being super meticulous. You drove me insane.
Well, you've got to do it. Put these things in a little book. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting on ranks in Brighton, a good friend of mine. We sit next to each other and he's saying, Manor House to Gibson Square, whatever it might be. And off we'd go. He wouldn't know whether I'd written out wrong, but he'd know if I'd said it wrong up against the book. And it was absolutely invaluable to have somebody there doing it all the time. You do not have to do things. Now, I discovered as part and parcel of my time when I was in the printing business, I used to continually read books and how the brain works, learning how to memorize things. So, Dave, how good is your memory?
Useless.
Okay. Let's try a little experiment, yeah?
Okay.
I'm going to ask you a multi-digit number.
Yeah.
And we're going to do the exercise twice. Having asked you the first one, you repeated it, and I'll ask for it again. Now, here comes the first number. 2, 3, 5, 4, 8, 7. What's the whole number?
2, 3, 4, 5, 8, 6, 7.
He's right, okay. Okay. Now we'll do the same exercise again, right? With a different number entirely. Forget the first one. Not going to ask you it again.
All right.
Okay. Here comes the second number. 1, 7, 8, 0, 6, 5, 2, 1, 8, 4.
No chance.
Let me just tell you what's happened. The human brain has a short-term memory of 7 plus or minus 2. Some people remember 5, some people remember 9. The second number I gave you was 10 digits. And what's interesting, you don't just forget the beginning or the end of the middle, you forget it all. It gets completely nestled and muddled up. You get into a mucking fuddle.
Yep.
Be careful, I said a mucking fuddle. Yep. And so you have to find strategies and ways of doing it. We're called chunking. So Dave, he's done it, so he's not allowed to do it.
Well, I'm certainly up for chunking.
As long as you're not having a blurring occurring.
Why is it called chunking? Are we about to find out?
You're about to find out, yeah.
Right.
So you divide it up into chunks.
Okay.
So the first part of that number is 178. So repeat after me, 178.
178.
And again.
178.
And again.
178.
And again.
178.
And again.
178.
One more time.
178.
Not too fast, okay? So the first part of the number is?
178.
Great. The second part of the number is 065. Repeat after me, 065.
065.
And again.
065.
And again.
065.
And again.
065.
And again.
065.
One more time.
065.
What's the first part of the number backwards?
871.
And the second part normal?
Forgot.
560.
060. You went backwards. 065.
Yeah, I thought you wanted it backwards.
Okay. So the first part of the number.
Nobody was forwards or backwards.
Okay, let's try. First part of the number is?
178.
The second part of the number is?
Forgotten.
065.
Did I say that?
Say that again. Come on, say that again.
178065.
Great. The third part of the number is 21. Repeat after me, 21.
21.
And again.
21.
And again.
21.
And again.
21.
And again.
21.
One more time.
21.
The first part is?
178.
The second part is?
065.
The third part is?
My age. 21.
21. Good lad.
You should be so lucky. This is more like your age. The last part.
What's coming?
The last part, 84. Repeat after me, 84.
84. 84.
And again.
84.
And again.
84.
And again.
84.
And again.
84.
Give me the whole number.
178065218 84.
Right.
Was it or not?
Yeah.
Well done, sir.
Now give it me back.
Am I official chunker? That's what I want.
You've been a chunker for a long time.
Yeah.
Now give it me backwards.
Oh, backwards. 178065218 84. So it'd be 4812560. That's 871.
Correct.
That's it.
And yet you couldn't do it at all a few minutes ago.
No.
So you chunked it. What we did, we took the whole thing.
I could chunk.
That's Mike's daughter's phone number, Dave, right? He's been trying to pawn her off for years.
Depends which one you're talking about, the three of them. So what we did, we took the number, divided it up and into chunks. Now, if I said to you, what's the third part? You'd say?
21.
Yeah, exactly. So do the same when you do the knowledge. Take a run, divide it up into three or four bits, learn that bit, we repeated it, each bit five times. So when you're doing the knowledge, if you take a run with, let's say you've got 12 roads on it, you take the first three or four roads, call them over four, at least five times, slowly, not too quickly, and then do the same with the next bit, and you'll find then when you eventually try to learn it totally, it'll be that much easier to learn. So that's one of the things that I did with Dean and other things we did as well, where we sort of, I'd get the weekly sheets when I got to pointing and mark up all the things I'd done in green. Then what I knew.
Mike, doing the knowledge twice, being a Worthing cab driver.
Brighton cab driver.
Sorry. Are you still?
I live in Worthing.
Are you still commuting from Worthing?
I still live in Worthing.
And what do you do? Do you come up? You ain't one of those airport sleepers, are you? Coming up from Worthing?
No. I usually start in the airport.
Yeah.
Certainly this time of year when it's busy. On the way in, I'll ring up to see if it's busy or not. If it's doing more than 2 hours, I don't bother going in there. Come mm-hmm. straight into town. I'll start in the airport. It's going to take me up to 2 hours to go through the system, generally clear my head and any bits of correspondence, phone calls and what have you. And then wherever it takes me is where I go. I don't care where I go. And then if I'm lucky, I'll get a job to Gatwick on a Sunday morning, for example, or Heathrow on the M25 or M23 and then M27 on home.
Okay. So for those who don't know, today's podcast, we're here with Mike Hughes. Me and David are here again with Mike Hughes. And Mike Hughes is the runner, runs completely on your own. Mike Hughes, the Poppy Cabs, or are you a team?
It's always a team, but the committee is huge.
One. Did you start it?
No. I've often been accused of doing that. Originally, it was started by a guy called Jonathan Myers, who, that particular year, 2009, we had TfL, in their great wisdom, decided that they were going to shut a lot of the tube stations and tube lines for maintenance. Mm-hmm. One of the stations was Westminster. So on one of the radio stations, a veteran was moaning about this. And then Jonathan Myers phoned up and said, forget TfL, put me in touch with a guy and I'll take him there for nothing. And a few of the others, this was in the days when the UCG was just starting, all the London Taxi Drivers Forum, many of whom were on that, started the UCG. And they all said, well, good idea, what are we going to do? Don't know. Waterloo's a good place, yeah. Okay, what else? I made some phone calls. Phoned the British Legion, and they said, Union Jack Club, Victory Services Club, great. That first year, 14 of us lined up on Westminster Bridge. Before we'd done that, though, I thought, well, I've got to do something by the book. So I phoned the police and found out the guy who was in charge of the barriers on Westminster Bridge. They let us inside what they call the soft barriers, the outer barriers, but of course you couldn't come past the hard barriers. They had concrete barriers on, actually on the bridge. Those first 2 years, we had the policeman in charge, and then TfL took over. So 3 years after the first lot, 14 of us on the bridge, we had 107 on the bridge. 2018, 2019, we had in excess of 150.
Cabs?
Cabs aren't waiting on the bridge.
Wonderful.
In each, because they, after 7 years of asking, they eventually gave me the use of the eastbound bus lane as well as the westbound one. 2020, 5 of us walked across the bridge, COVID. And subsequently to that, wonderful improvements that have been made on Westminster Bridge. Of course, we've got far less of us, far less space for us. But last year, we didn't finish till 4 o'clock. This year, we seem to have got round a few bits and pieces. And we finished about 2:30 this year.
This year, how many cabs, Mike?
Oh, it's always hard to say. I've got a database of 350 cabs. There's usually at least 250 of them will turn out. 150 helpers, usually at least half of that turns out as well.
So just let me get this straight, right? Because I'm super impressed that for Remembrance Sunday, 250 cab drivers will turn up and take veterans and any servicemen.
Hang on, it's more than that, because there's 250 people on the database.
Right.
They're the ones who I send the messages to and say, can you go to? But the drivers that are actually at the stations will also muck in and help out.
Yes, and Chuck. Well, I have done several myself. I've done Chelsea pensioners, taking them down. I've took military guys from the stations, and any military people that you pick up on that day, you don't charge. I don't know if you've... I'm very impressed with the numbers of cabbies that turn up and they actually do it on the day anyway.
I often quote, we do up to 1,000 cab journeys. In fact, it's probably about 700-ish in each direction.
And this is because
journeys.
They couldn't get there on the day a station was closed, and a springboard thing into what we now do, which is to make sure they get there. And
I mean, the for many years, the committee has been huge. One.
Well, you are huge.
Thank you. Yes. Yeah, thank you very much.
But chunking. Arguing with yourself, that's a bit difficult.
Chunking.
Chunky, he's chunking.
By the way, what's the fourth part of the number?
21. 84.
Yeah.
21.
No, third part is 21.
Yeah.
065.
I haven't asked you for some time.
178-065-2184.
Well, you say that. It's six not? Because when I went to pick up my LEVC cab from Cab Vision, I flagged the cab down outside London Bridge. Mm-hmm. He jumps in, he says, 178-065-2184. 4 years previously, I'd asked him that. I still remember the number.
Oh, you haven't done something to me, have you?
Yeah, you're now starting. When he makes a chicken noise.
Yeah, I know. My wife's going to find me naked in the street, isn't she, at 3 a.m. or something, saying those numbers.
The whole point is that chunking works. Trying to fill your brain with too much too soon scrambled your brain.
Exactly.
Totally. You've got to take it easy. You've got to take a little bit at a time, and you've got to repeat, repeat, and
repeat again.
And
repeat.
There you go.
But there's something else to add to that, Michael. I mean, a lot of people, when they come to the knowledge, they think, oh, shall I learn memory techniques? Well, learning memory techniques is a study in itself. Yep. So you're studying the knowledge. And repeat and chunking are the simplest and most effective ideas anywhere. So you don't have to go off learning memory techniques. But a lot of people don't understand the value of repetition, and they don't understand the value of making the information small piece that I can remember this and then add this and remember this with it added and added and added. And we compartmentalize the little chunks and put them together. It's an age-old tested method, and it's really effective. And you don't need to go off and start studying memory techniques, which is a real serious thing because it gets really, really in-depth. And I don't know if you noticed, Mike, they did a study on, you know, the memory competitions where you remember decks of cards and stuff like that. Well, we've experimented with that, and it's quite fun. But they'd done real memory tests on the guys that would win these memory competitions and found that they fundamentally had below average to average memories and above average technique. Yep. So that everything they were doing was all around technique. They had no better memory brain than anybody else. So some people can have an actual physical good memory, which they could just use, because some people can remember every day of their life. But that's the phenomenon. But the guys that win the competitions with the decks of cards and everything else, no, they're nothing to do with their memory. Everything to do with the techniques that they've applied to it. And the basics would be chunking, but they usually use memory palaces and storytelling to create longer strings of information.
Is that the same as like counting cards in a casino?
Against
the rules, isn't it? I don't know if it's illegal, but it's against the rules.
It always seems unfair, doesn't it? I'm basically better at it than you because I can count the cards, but how would they make that illegal if it...
You can do it, but they won't let you come in there because they're considered...
Too good.
You're too good.
Yeah.
It's not...
But they will chuck you out as
They'll chuck you out.
They'll chuck you out if they think you're doing it.
Get you out of it. But it's not, strictly speaking, illegal. And they have ways where they can detect these things.
They have ways.
Well, what a skill that is. It's not only the fact of counting cards. It would be the weighing up of percentages. So you know that the three kings have gone and there's only one king left, so therefore the percentage chances of me pulling that king that I need for my hand.
That's where the poker players come in.
Yeah, they're good at that.
Yeah.
I'm not a gambler, so I leave that to my dad, that stuff.
Yeah. So the whole point of this chunking thing is that you notice I could ask you that number, any part of that number, in any order. Mm-hmm. Right, what's the second part backwards, for example?
560.
Okay. So when you're actually coming to doing the knowledge, if you chunked your runs rather than taking one long piece, if you're trying to work something out from an examiner has asked you, you can take a chunk from one run, a chunk from another run, and put them together, forwards or backwards, and it helps you considerably. So I always try and spend time with knowledge students when I see them. I spend half an hour or so and say, well, try these methods of doing these things.
Do you use the same number that you just used on me for everyone?
Yeah.
You have to. It'll get difficult, won't it?
So there'd be people watching. Everyone would have been repeating that.
But then I might then just turn around to people and say, well, you know, I do have a couple of numbers occasionally, but that's the same.
You should have done your phone number, Mike. We'd have all memorised your phone number. Yes. And when it comes to getting on poppy cabs, we know who to phone.
There's no phone number on there. There's an email address, because believe me, on Remembrance Sunday, I get so many phone calls. Mm. It's the brain goes mad, shall we say.
Sure. What is the email? Let's memorise that.
Okay, there's a couple of them. Yeah. One to remember mainly is poppycab@virginmedia.com. Not poppycabs.
Mm-hmm.
Poppy cab without the S at virginmedia.com.
Could you have got one of the smaller providers to rather than Virgin Media? Maybe someone that was just gmail.com?
Gmail causes problems when I'm sending emails from my other one. My main one, personal one, is mike@mikehughes.org.uk. So my name's on there.
Yes.
Yeah, so
could you not get mikehughes@gmail.com?
Gmail. The hassles I have, if I reply to somebody from Gmail and I've got an attachment or something to it, or it's part and parcel of a large group. If I send from the Poppycab address, it accepts it most places. If I send from Mike Hughes one, it doesn't. I just got to remove one or two lines or bits and pieces, and there it goes. It is the bane of my life, Gmail.
It is terrible. Because of spamming, there's loads of filters in place on all these things, and it is terrible.
So presumably the Poppycab one is seen as a whitelist one.
Mm.
But when I send out, I've got, bearing in mind I've got about 350 to send out at a time, I can usually get 150 or so in one, not in one go, in three or four bit chunks.
With no attachment.
With an attachment.
I suppose it's because it's the attachment that generally causes these problems with bulk emails.
I mean, the briefing notes, the final briefing notes, most of it's bullshit, I know, because I wrote it. But there are the odd chunks of chunks.
Blurring's occurring,
yeah,
Dave.
Yes.
Yeah, blurring's occurring. The odd chunks of knowledge in there, so useful things in there. Most of it's there for people to tick boxes, and I try and go through it so that everybody knows what's involved on the final briefing. Things like, for example, we use the bus lane at Cockspur Street. When I write that out, it is recommended you go down King Charles I Island to turn around. Notice it's recommended, not you must. With a cab driver, if ever you want help, ask. Mm-hmm. If you're really in trouble, they've got the end of the earth for you. If you tell them to do something, even if there's money involved, the second word's usually off. It's written in such a way that it's requesting cab drivers to do things. But those who've been on my briefing, final briefing, know that my introduction is always, people say, my management style is similar to that of Genghis Khan or Attila the Hun. Mm-hmm. They're totally and utterly wrong. Both those are far too left-wing for me. And then I'll say that I appreciate you all volunteer, so please remember, whenever I say anything, it's always a request. It's just that sometimes it may sound like a command. And the final bit is that there's every chance I may upset one or more of you before the end of the day. Please don't take it personally. It's just that sometimes I can get too enthusiastic. And from that point onwards, I can get away with blue murder.
Yeah.
Or it seems like, anyway. Do you know what my payment is? My cab is at the front of the line on Westminster Bridge.
Show off.
That's the only payment I've ever asked for. My space is always left at the front. It's usually the last cab to leave, but it's always at the front.
It's a magnificent thing that you arrange and that us cab drivers get involved in with poppy cabs.
I got an award last night.
We was going to get on to the award. It wasn't a BAFTA. It was
Oscar.
It was the Worshipful Company of Hackney Carriage Drivers.
Yep.
And they awarded you what exactly?
Exactly, I can't remember. it's on my phone. It's the...
I've got a picture. I'm putting it on the screen now.
Put it on the screen. That'll tell everybody. It's for charity and for involved with
all the charity work. And you were standing alongside our good friend Tom Hutley. Tom,
yeah, he was sat next to me. He got one for his work that he'd done with helping them with PR.
Yep.
And television. Sort of.
And you was also sat next to my nephew.
Your nephew, yes.
Nicky O'Connor.
Yes, yes, yes.
Who was getting his badge that day for the tour guides for the Worshipful Company of Tour Guides.
And a few of the others that were there, people who've been helping me in the past as knowledge boys or knowledge students and are now cab drivers. So, I mean, I'm very good at getting volunteers. I can remember one guy called Lee Martin and his friend. Must be 7, 8 years ago, maybe 10 years ago. I can't remember. They were going over Southwark Bridge. I said, where are you going? Oh, we're doing some pointing. They said, not anymore, follow me. We took him down to Great Suffolk Street and they volunteered. And Lee's still been coming there every year since.
Oh, wow.
He's actually part of the senior management. I say the management team has been one. I have a gang, a group of people who I trust, really trust. Mm-hmm. People like Doug Cheshire, who's the guy in charge of the vintage taxis, Lee, and a few others whose advice I trust. Don't always take it, but I trust their advice. And they're the people who are in the more senior positions. They know what they're doing on the day. I try, if I can, to think of everything I can before the day, on the day it's handed over to other people. Cab drivers, left alone, know what they're doing. Cab drivers told what to do will do the exact opposite.
So apart from our own organisation, the Worshipful Company of Hackney Carriage Drivers, recognising all the great work that you've done, surely you should be up for a knighthood.
Possible. Why is it not possible?
Why not? Yeah, why not?
I work nights. Is that good enough?
Yeah.
That means I got to work nights in the hood?
Well, you know, these guys, especially the veterans and what we've ever done and what you're doing for them, and it's our...
Let's just get...
I know Charles, King Charles.
The first.
Spaniel.
Yeah, especially after you said it's King Charles III.
Are you getting used to the fact that everything is now, we no longer have QCs, we have KCs, we no longer have the Queen's Chapel of the Savoy? It's now the King's Chapel of the Savoy?
Yeah. Obviously, I've done poppy cabs for a long time, but I'm also a volunteer driver for the taxi charity for military veterans. They put me together with a guy called Major Edwin Hunt about 7 years, 7, 8 years ago. He, heck of a character. I'd taken him to Normandy and Holland several times. 2019, I think it was. It was very, very cold. He ended up hypothermic. He was so bad, they held the ferry up for 45 minutes in case we had to take him off. Long story cut short, this is. We got back. I took him all the way home. He started sitting me up and he said, "You should take him to the hospital when we got to Harwich." I said, "Yeah." He said, "But you took me home." And he said, "Yeah." I had another veteran with me at the time, a guy called Fred Glover. Heck of a story he's got. And then in 2011. What planet? Am I on the planet Zog?
I say, 178-065-2184.
See, it works. Though. It works. So last year, 2022, that's more like it. Ted's history. He was born the 23rd of March, 1920. In 1948-20, he was sent to Narvik in Norway, where the first thing they had to do was prepare an airstrip. He was an engineer. Dunkirk happened. They had to destroy everything, pulled out. He went to work on the defences in East Anglia. And then he was a waterman and lighterman, who were the precursors of taxi drivers.
The original taxi drivers, yep. The waterman and lightman.
Yep. He and others were recruited in 1943, so by the time D-Day came along, he was a captain in charge of 15 special low-draft rhino barges on Gold Beach. So 6th of June 1944, he was there. In 1945, he and a Dutch engineer by the name of Constance van Brixton designed and built what became the longest all-floating Bailey Bridge of World War II. Last year, they had a commemoration to it.
To him or the bridge?
They opened for the bridge, but he was the guest of honour.
Yeah.
Just I'll come back to that in a moment. So after the war, he retired as a major, started a school for watermen and lightermen, and rightly claims he saved many people's lives because he thought they might be safe on the water. And in 1978, he was appointed the Queen's Barge Master, a job he did for 12 years until he was age 70. He was pig-headed, stubborn, opinionated, cantankerous, kept trying to order people around, and would never do as he's told. And he said exactly the same about me, which is why we got on so well. If you'd seen us together, you'd swear I was being totally and utterly disrespectful. The exact reverse is true. They knew, he knew, and his family knew, and I was told, whatever it takes, whatever it costs, he's going to go there. Because they were opening the memorial and he was the guest of honour.
Yeah.
He didn't know he was the guest of honour. He knew he had something important to do there. We were there for 12 days and he would literally die. I carried a DNR form, do not resuscitate, which is his wishes should something happen to him. So he knew I'd get him there. He knew I'd get him back.
What age was he when you was doing this?
102.
Shut up.
102, yeah. So he was deteriorating, and this is where Mickey Harris comes in. I said before I left that no way was I going to go on my own with him. Somebody had to come with us,
yeah,
carer. So the family got in at Worthing. We drove to Dartford, where we met Mickey and his wife, Barbara. Barbara sat in the back with Major Ted, and they got on like a house on fire. He always liked a new audience, did Ted. And I didn't realise Barbara had terminal cancer at the time. Great lady. Got on the ferry. The guys of the taxi charity medics looked after Ted there, but I was really, really stressed out. But the Dutch people had arranged for three army nurses to look after him in turn on a rota. If I'd been 40 years younger, should we say, one of them would have made me stand to attention.
100 years younger.
Yay, oi. Maybe in Ted's case, but not mine.
Yeah, go.
However, so they were like Atlas having the world taken off his shoulder when they turned up. They were very good. When at the end of the thing, they gave me a bottle of whiskey, which I didn't open until a year later. And there's a reason for that, I'll tell you in a minute. So I got Ted back and I couldn't see him in his care home because the care home was in Worthing where I live. The care home kept getting locked down for COVID. They'd locked down for 10 days. Then somebody else would get locked down for another 10 days. The idea was that when the taxi charity brought people to Worthing for the weekend, for the day out, rather. I had arranged to pick Ted up. I said, even if you're in the back of the cab, you can say hello to people. Yes, he said. Weekend before, he fell and broke his hip. Local doctors examined him and said, we're not going to offer it because if we put him under, he's not coming back. They were hoping to get him out on the Tuesday. Didn't come out. Came out on the Wednesday. I believe I was the first non-staff member to see him. And he gave me a huge hug. If I'd hugged him back with a tenth of the pressure he'd given me, I'd have broken his back. And I said to him, so sorry, Ted, you know. He said, no, lad. That's the way he spoke. You gave me something so special. And it meant a lot to me that he said that. I arranged to see him the following Monday. I had a phone call on the Friday beforehand to say, from the ward sister, he deteriorated coming on the Saturday. So I went in on the Saturday and saw him 3 o'clock at 3:45. He wasn't conscious. Mm-hmm. I know that the last sense to go and the first one to come back is always hearing. So maybe he heard what I said. I don't know. That's why whenever you see somebody's in a coma, be careful what you say.
Yeah.
They can often hear what you're saying.
Well, I'll make sure that you got that tenner you owe me.
No, the 20 quid you owe me, I think, isn't it? Yeah. I tell you what, we both agreed, Dave, or just both
yeah.
tenner.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that right, Dave?
178-065-2184. That's all I can say to
you. I tell you what, I have about a pound for every one of those numbers.
Yeah.
Hey? I forgot it now.
It's 10 digits, so, you know. Yeah, yeah so... so he, I saw him on the Saturday, left him at 3:45, 6:20 he was dead. This is where going out on the trips with the veterans and also with the kids, I've not done the kids myself, but I know people who have done.
Yeah.
Because the kids are so hard work. Not in a nasty way, but, you know, I'm an old fart.
You're a nasty bastard.
No, I'm an old fart. And I can take old farts around and I'm at their pace, you would say. Yeah. But the kids, I've got no chance of keeping up with them buggers.
Yeah.
But the drivers get attached to them and it can be very, very emotional. So you don't realise that's the payback. That's not where the money goes. And it's more than any pound note you're ever going to take.
Yeah.
So there you go. That's
It must be heart-wrenching. I mean, every year on year you do these things and you slowly see. What's scary about it is, for me, is you probably become aware of your own aging and mortality. You're seeing these people pass away and you realize every day it's getting closer and closer.
Yep.
Don't you think about it now at all, now you're older? Don't you think about how much time you got left?
No, we've done it. Me and you have both made changes, and I've made changes because I had my first child when I was 47 and my second when I was 49. So it means I'm an old dad. I still like to think I'm fit and healthy, but as soon as I had those children and I'm watching them grow, I suddenly have become even more and more aware that I need to stay around as long as possible, because there's nothing more beautiful than seeing them and watching them and the things to come in the future. And obviously making them safe and trying to give them a foundation that they can build upon from me. So I'm more and more aware of my mortality now. And anyone our age... I hate to
hang
say
on, hang on. Wait till you get to my age.
You're really young.
You're youngsters, you are.
You won't even make it to the end of this podcast.
Hang on. Is that a 45 you've got there, Dave? Oh, no, you just...
no, but every single one of my best friends except one is dead. So most of the kids that I grew up with, they're all best friends, didn't make it into their 50s, Dave. It's like, so we're lucky. And in that sense, though, me and Dave have both stopped drinking, and we're not stopped drinking forever. That's not my plan.
Just take breaks.
Yeah. But it is more of the fact of be aware that if a lot of people don't realise that you've been drinking every day, because that's the culture that you get into. You don't realise that you just had a gin and tonic today and you think that you just had a lemonade. No, you had a gin and tonic today and then you had three gin and tonics or a beer the other day, and every day there was an alcohol drink in your system.
I'm antisocial. I grew up in the days when... you're antisocial if you're a non-smoker. Everybody smoked.
Yeah.
Flashy ash, you did. I was never smoked.
Never. Did you smoke?
When I was younger, yeah. I say younger, I think I started at about 25 years old, like a lunatic. I was in Tenerife or something like that.
When I was 2 years old, my uncle smoked a pipe, and they gave me one of these clay pipes, you know, kiddie ones. I took some tobacco and smoked it like a trooper. I never wanted anything afterwards. That's the only time I ever smoked. And I very rarely drink, because I've been in a job where... I pick up the pieces of drunken drivers. Mm. And with kids and family, I've always been the driver. So your kids go at night time, you go and pick them up. I used to drink a little bit when I had the printing business. For night time, I was Scotch, whatever. So I rarely drink. I mean, I was out last night and drank no alcohol.
And that was an event to be at. You was at your worshipful company award presentation. Yep. I'd have been blistered on the floor. Me and Dave would have been home by Wednesday.
Well, yeah, I definitely would have stayed in a hotel. Yeah.
Well, I've been out on booze-ups. Absolute piss-ups. When... I've come away with my sides aching with laughter at the antics of everybody else.
Yeah.
And next morning is great. I mean, I remember one year going to a show with the Motorola Club. The night before, I had 8 pints of water. And next morning, they're all there, oh, my head. I said, come on, lads, some nice greasy bacon and sausages here. Oh.
Oh, that's lovely after a night, eh?
Yeah. So it's great to laugh at the antics of other people.
Where was the award ceremony? Whereabouts was it?
In the Waterman's Hall, which is great for me because that, of course, Ted Hunt was a waterman. The association was serendipitous.
Was the master of the Waterman's there?
Lady Master.
Master of the Waterman's is a taxi driver as well.
Is it?
Yes, Simon McCarthy.
Oh, I don't know that.
Yeah.
Wasn't Waterman classed years and years ago, classed part of being a taxi to get him across before there were bridges?
He said that about half an hour ago.
Yeah. He was still thinking of his number.
Were you in this room?
No. He was doing his number in
there. What's the
third part of the number?
178-065-2184.
I
think you switched me off there.
So, Michael, I know that you're a historian thingy, but enlighten us. What are the lightermen?
Lightermen are in charge of barges that move goods, and watermen are in charge of barges that move people, and they're often interchangeable.
Mm-hmm.
So, there you go.
There you go.
My father in law was a lightman.
Was he?
Yeah.
Whose dad was
he? How long ago was he a lightman?
He's still alive now. He's 89, 90.
He's still
90 in March.
Ask him if he knew Ted Hunt, because Ted Hunt probably trained him.
Mike Hunt.
Yeah.
He would have done.
He probably would have done. Yeah, he was on the barges
school,
and all that.
Started the school in
1945. When they built the Limehouse Link, I was driving tippers taking the muck away. He was taking the muck away on the barges down to Tilbury.
Still working on it.
We were both working at the same time on the same projects, on the Limehouse Link. When they built the Tinkton, both link tunnels and the West Rail. When they built Canary Wharf.
For me, the Limehouse Link wasn't that far back in history. I mean, obviously, I was...
late 80s, 90s, was it? Something like
when
they do it wasn't built when I drove the cab first time. It was the second time.
Yes.
That's why... First time, it took me 21 months. Second time, 2 years, 5 months, 5 days. I didn't count the hours and minutes.
Yep.
And Limehouse Link hadn't been done. Canary Wharf hadn't been developed.
Mike, the first time you did the knowledge, they hadn't even built St. Paul's Cathedral.
Actually, at the beginning, I said that I could tell you about the present methods as well. When I went up with the 400 runs, and I went up, I was on the very last presentation, and the examiner came out and said, "We're going to have new ones starting in February. We've got 320 runs." And half the people got up and walked out.
They thought it was easy.
Well, I knew, because you had already had maps of the 400 runs. So if they've got map tests of the 320s, they're all going to be new. You've got nothing you can swat up on. Luckily, I mean, when they gave me my map test, is one I practiced with you, and they gave me ones around Bruton Street and or West End, because I used to walk the beat around there. So I knew all them were okay. Lucky. And I went through on the 400. But my call-over partner, Steve Mepham, when I first met Steve, he said, "Oh, I used to be a minicab controller." He said, "I know London very well." I said, "No, you don't." "Yes, I do." He said, "No, you don't." 6 months later, he said, maybe I didn't.
Yeah.
We got to a point with Steve. I used to say to him, "Do this." He said, "I don't agree with you." He said, "But I better do it to save you turn around saying, I told you so." Because I'd done it before and could see what I did a little bit. Not a lot further in front of him. So he was on the 320s, and I was on the 400s. What's interesting, he would call over on the 320 runs, and I remember, I think it was Wilkins gave me a question, which was from the new book, the 320 book, and I called it. Mm-hmm. But I had to work it out. I think it's Castlane Road, is it?
Might have been. There is, I wouldn't know.
South of Hammersmith Bridge.
Yeah.
To wherever it went. Anyway. I actually worked it out in my head. And it's afterwards, Steve said, that's part of our new books.
No, you mean Castle Knoll, not Castlelaine Road?
Castle Knoll, sorry.
Yeah, Castlelaine Road is Warrington Crescent.
South of Hampshire.
Yeah. Look, hang on. It's a long time since I've done the knowledge.
It's okay. None of us, we all passed it. There is no shame at all for any of us. We don't need to know anything anymore.
I had trouble finding my place I had to go to 3 weeks ago. York.
York?
Yeah.
You had a York, yeah? We're talking about Big Fair, so what did you earn on that one?
I'm not going to tell you. I could tell you, but then I have to kill you.
Oh, dear.
Put it this way. Up until that point, the furthest I'd been was Leeds, and that was about 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And it was the night when they had all the storms and all the overhead wires had come down. And up comes I hate to say this, I don't put it on very often.
It's good. You can put it on and it's worked. I think we should stop knocking it all.
So the marshals come up, and they were on 10% that night, not 20. They came out. I said, "Two people here to go to Peterborough, the staff." "Okay, no problems." "Oh, when you drop them off, take this gentleman to York." "Okay." Once I got to Peterborough, worked it out, it's 102 miles to York from Peterborough. Mm-hmm. Back to my home was 280 miles, 5 hours.
Round trip. What, in the, you put the turbo on?
No.
5 hours back.
I've now got the
TXE. 5 hours back.
5 hours back. I've now got the TXE. It's lovely. You go up the A1, stick the cruise control 67, 68, mm-hmm. 70 in some places. When it's 60, stick the cruise control 60, 62. When it's 50, 52. And you can go, cruise control. Yeah. Hardly ever use the brakes. And it was nice and simple and easy.
And not so rattly. You want an old, not an old yeah. rattler.
Well, my first experience of cruise control was in 1980. I'd taken a 5 week holiday in Canada, which is when I'd first in the cab trade, and had a car with cruise control. Great it was. I mean, takes some getting used to because it would actually accelerate where you would normally be decelerating. Came back, got in the cab. How the hell am I to turn the steering wheel? I don't know. It was such a difference because there was no steering, no power steering.
No power steering.
No power brakes in those days. It took me 2 or 3 weeks to get used to it because your muscles get used to it.
Yeah.
So they help.
We spoke about this yesterday with when Peter was here, Peter of Spandau Ballet fame. When I passed out, every taxi driver would say to you, how's your knee? And because you would never have really, if you spent a day shift where you're working hard, you'd never would have broke and accelerated, the legs coming up. And you get this pain in the knee about here. And everybody kind of knew it. But if you imagine you had the same thing with the manual,
yep,
doing a 12-hour shift in a manual, changing gears through the streets
of
London.
It was heavy. I got an automatic after 1 week.
That's it. But when you first started, you had the horse, didn't you?
Was that manual?
Manual, is it? It was Emmanuel, was the horse's name.
It was handsome.
Yep.
Oh, it get worse.
Yeah. Oh, here we go. So, this year was a great year for Poppy Cabs. Is it looking like something that we can sustain?
This is 14 years I've done it.
Yep.
And it would be nice to find somebody who can take it over. I've got an unusual set of skills. And yep. That's not being boastful. Things I've done. I have a group of people who, between them, got the skills. But
they're also
very busy.
So, we need a replacement for you, Mike.
Yep.
You need to rest. You've done, your special work is over. You need a rest.
I've had one knee replaced. I've got the other one to be replaced sometime early next year.
Yeah.
So who knows? Because when I broke my leg in 1975, it was very, very bad. Mm-hmm. They couldn't replace it then. I was too young. And the technology hadn't gone far enough. So they did that in 2005. And I had...
So are you walking better now? Because I know I've seen you over the years. You've had some bad spells.
Yeah, no, not anymore. Because my left leg's gone. That was my right leg was bad. I was back at work 7.5 weeks after the operation.
You know, if Mr. Price was here, he'd say, they'd take you outside and put you down.
First job back.
Go on.
Heathrow. Although I take it nice and easy. Heathrow to Stansted on the meter.
Was it a two-leg job?
Two-leg job.
No, I just did the one leg.
Did you rank up at Heathrow then? And took your first job?
First job back after my...
M25 day, obviously.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah.
First job back after my... And I worked one day, took 2 days off. Worked one day, took 2 days off. To gradually work my way back in and back home.
Are you still working hard in the cab now or not so much?
I'm still working.
Yeah.
I usually get about 40 hours in 3 nights.
Okay. What?
40 hours in 3 nights.
Well, you're doing plenty then still.
Yeah.
My other question is, I mean, obviously you're like 107 years old as of now. But when you came into this podcast, you was only 77.
Yeah,
76. Now you've just aged. But how are you finding the medical each year?
Easy? The strange thing is, it's actually good for me because I always get a blood test done a month beforehand. And I can speak to the doctor about that and other bits and pieces. So they found out about my enlarged prostate and bits and other things. I had high blood pressure. That's sorted out.
Mm-hmm.
One stage until I lost my weight, I was on metformin because I was on what they call pre-diabetes. Lost the weight. That's not come off.
Yes, you was a big man back
then.
Yeah,
I still am. Well parts of you are not anymore. Not since taking those pills.
I can remember you wobbling up the stairs in Watts Grove to get to the first floor. It got a bit difficult.
I wobbled up here a little while ago. So I think it's actually good for me because it makes me look after myself, mm-hmm. and I just double check everything's working, basically.
Yeah, well, because this is one of the things, again, talking about the special things of our job. we are working for ourselves, and we can go on and for as long as we're healthy enough. And as long as we can keep passing the medicals. I'm shocked you keep passing the medicals. A man of your calories.
I think to rest is to rest, though. Yeah.
To rest, you're right, Dave. Absolutely.
Well, just looking at you two devils, I mean, I think I seem to have weathered life a lot better than you two put together.
Me and Dave really got 6 months left between us.
Well, I'm chunking still.
You're chunking.
What's the number backwards?
And I'm blurring.
Blurring is occurring.
The number backwards.
Yeah.
So that'd be 4812.
Yep.
560871.
It works. Just another little.
Everyone's going to think that's completely set up.
The last two bits. Another way of association. What's 21 times 4?
48.
No.
84.
Yeah. And what's the last part of the number?
Yeah, backwards. You thought he was saying you got it backwards.
Got me backwards and forwards. So
you can do other associations as well.
You've confused me now. I've got it.
Now 84 is gone because you've got 48. Yeah.
Oh, I lost it.
You've mangled his brain. He's now spaghetti. Yeah.
You've blurred me.
Yeah. Blurred
me. Anyway, as I said, when I got picked up from London Bridge, the guy rattled the number off. And he paid forward the fare.
Do you know you've met Dave before?
Yes, I picked him up.
Yeah.
Him and his missus.
COVID.
As a fare.
It wasn't full COVID. We was in one of those where we could go in someone's garden if we rolled a trouser leg up and stood on one leg.
Oh, and
something like that.
If you had a friend with the Prime Minister at the time, you could do that.
And if you were chunky like me, you're fine. And and thankfully I got a cab and it was Michael who come and pick me and my wife up and took us home.
Did he know the way or did he get lost?
No, I got lost.
Yeah, we was all lost.
He was pissed. He was well pissed. I did manage to sell him a public card badge, though.
Yes.
I gave you one, didn't I?
For my wife, you did, yeah.
Yeah.
Did you tell him you was a cabbie? I'm a cabbie at the time, wasn't
he? Yeah, I did. No, I was, yeah. Yeah. No, I was at the time, yeah. Yeah, it was 2020, I was, yeah. Well, there was nowhere to go.
You were out working.
I think you were... When we looked to try to get a cab, there was none. And just one came along. It was like, a scene from 1960s with a fog, or the 50s with the smog. And this cab came through. It was poppy cabs come through and got us home.
If it had been foggy, can you just imagine how you would have felt, out of the fog?
Well, it looked foggy to me after all those John Smiths.
He'd had a few.
What was you doing working during COVID?
First 4 months, I didn't work at all. I had to get some tyres. I thought I'd just work a little bit. I did a couple of hours. Only did 3 or 4 jobs. Mm. But people like Get and the others, they kept your work coming. You paid the 20% because you didn't have any choice. But I remembered. Because they went from 15 to 20 immediately went locked down. It sticks in the craw, should we say that is.
Well, but there's a double-sided coin there because without it, there was nothing.
Exactly.
So you're going to be grateful for one thing.
Yeah.
A lot of people could survived because of that.
Yeah. And luckily, I mean, I'd worked it out with my pensions. I could just about survive but I couldn't pay for holidays, couldn't pay for work to be on the house. If the dog was sick, couldn't pay for that. It would just about pay the bills. I thought, do I retire? Do I know? I like being a cab driver. I come to work because I want to. I love it.
It wouldn't surprise me if you let your badge lapse and you went and done the bloody knowledge again. But that brings us on to another thing. Getting your badge lapse now is nothing like it was when you did it.
Tell me more.
If you've let your badge lapse for even 20 years, doesn't matter, you can now go back and have a retest that involves a one-off test. And in that one-off test, if you can show that you've still got what you need to drive a cab, you'll get your badge back straight away. If you fail it, you get 2 more chances, but you can go up and you can express. They give you a scoring system.
Yeah.
So you can get your badge back within 1 to 3 appearances of a different kind of appearance, where there's a lot of leeway. We've done a video about it yesterday and we've done a few in the past. And I think it's excellent because doing the knowledge once, we've done a magnificent thing, making someone like yourself, and you're not the only example, are you? I've got loads in my school who have physically done the knowledge twice, and I could name 4 people straight off the top of my head. So now you don't have to do that, and now you can get back your badge very, very quickly.
God, I did all that work for no.
Well, you'd have to wait until now, so you'd be 77. Yeah. It only came in a year ago.
To be fair, it took me 2.5 years. I was treated fairly. I worked my nuts off, as you know.
Yeah.
Even though sometimes people thought, you were given something. No, I wasn't. They treated me exactly the same as anybody else. On my first 21, only 21, I turned up. I was in the cafe opposite with one of the the knowledge point collectors. In comes Courtney Connell, and he says, right, come over quickly, he said.
Courtney was an examiner at this time that you're there. Was, okay. Yeah.
Mr. Price and myself, the only two in. Mm-hmm. So all the things I'd done, oh, shit. Oh, well, no good, all learning all that lot. And in the end, I just relaxed. Mm-hmm. Waiting there, Mr. Price said, asked me a number of questions. One, he said, take me from Arsenal Football Club to Chelsea Football Club. And I laughed. So excuse me, sir, but one of my call-over partners is an Arsenal supporter. The other one's a Chelsea supporter. Now, again, the beautiful thing in that day, backtracking a bit, one of my call-over partners was Steve Meppham, lived in Thornton Heath, no problems. The other guy was Dave. He lived in St. Albans. And I live in Worthing. You couldn't get much further apart if you tried. But we would spend over an hour each day on the phone calling over. And you can cheat. Of course you can cheat. But who are you cheating? Only yourself. And so we called over a lot. Hell of a lot. Call over, call over, call over. Yeah. And we repeated. And that's what paid.
One of the little tricks that I would tell people, don't let them know what you know. Make everything look harder than what it is. So if they've asked you two football clubs and you know the answer already, don't be flash. Make it look much, much harder than it really is and stretch the question.
But by this time, he'd already asked me three, and I think it was...
You're in the bag.
I knew that there was a likelihood I was going to score, should we say. Mm. I didn't know what the score was going to be, double A.
Yeah.
But...
Did you get any double A's on your trip through?
That was my double A.
Okay,
I'm in your Hall of Fame. I was a long time ago.
Yes, from Mr. Price. You know, I've lost that document. I have no idea where it is. Because on that document is Peter Gardner, who had five appearances. They were all double A's and A's. There was no B's, C's. Yeah. So he did it in the modern era on just five appearances. Wow. And Peter Gardner was completely unique in that sense. He didn't do the knowledge super, super quickly. I mean, he'd done it in about 2 years, but... It depends on how long you spent studying to get ready for it. He was a school teacher before, but I am not aware of anybody really doing it in less than 10. So for him to halve it, you have to look at, and I can't remember the bloody scorecard, but it is five. It'd have to be a double A, and a double A would take, well, three double A's would give you the knowledge.
Yeah.
So in some senses, there's two A's, and you have to spread that out to make three levels of appearances, but that's what he done.
I scored in everything except one. Richly deserved my D. Mm-hmm. I think it was my first 28th. Believe me, it made me double down from that point onwards. Yeah.
Who do you remember who that was who gave you that? Was it a man? Mr. Yes. Crisp? Mr. Bishop? No.
Bishop is the one that gave me my badge in the end. So
yes, he would have been the head examiner. He would have been Skull at the time.
Bishop gave me the gun, not Price. Mm. Bishop and Courtney Connell were there on that day.
Yeah.
And who was the examiner? Previously, he'd done every tube station on the Circle Line. I studied the whole lot.
Oh, I think I nearly can remember. But there's somebody. There was Bob Hoskins was one. There was people think we're talking about Bob Hoskins, the actor, but it was a Bob Hoskins examiner.
Yeah.
There was Mr. O'Keefe. Yeah.
O'Keefe, that's the one.
He was a great examiner.
He was great. Because you'd get his lists, and they were very rarely repeated. Never repeated. Mm-hmm. You'd always have something different.
I'm trying to remember all the examiners now.
He'd ask every tube station. And I worked it out. If you go one way, you can do one... and go the opposite way. I really studied for him. I was expecting to get him on my 21s because he wasn't there. Mm-hmm. I thought, well, just relaxed. I'll take what comes. And that's, I think, when you relax is when things sort of come into your brain a bit better.
Absolutely. This is another thing that I touched upon the other day with another student. When you, for example, don't build up this fear about having Mark Gunning or Jay Patel. If you get the exam that makes you afraid, take it I don't care attitude. Once you don't care, you're more relaxed, and what will be, and you perform. But if you do the opposite and then heightened the tension within yourself, you function even less.
Take that with you when you go out. Because I get people sometimes, they say, we need to be there in 20 minutes, and you know damn well it's going to take 30. And I say, can you go any faster? Oh, no. I said, you might be in a rush, I'm not. And they say, what will be. There's a secret number, or used to be a secret number, I don't know if it still applies. If you're going to 30-mile-an-hour zone with a dual carriageway, for example, it's 28. Mm-hmm. If you average 28 miles an hour, you'll get fewer red lights than if you go faster or slower, depending on the time of day. If you're going in the morning, it's phased for coming in. Evening, phased for going out.
You must never hit a traffic light, Dave. You always do 28.
That's fast, 28. I don't know that fast.
Hang on, most of it these days is 20. But you get used to the sequences, and you just keep going. I mean, one of the things when we go to Holland with the taxi charity, I'm butterflying now, we are taken with the police that give us an escort in Holland. We don't stop at traffic lights. We don't stop at junctions. You just keep going. Mm. We do 90 on the motorway, kilometres an hour.
Yeah.
But everything else. And it's not the speed, it's the continuity that counts. I was taught that by somebody in the police a long time
ago. Because of Brighton knowledge compared. What was that?
Brighton, I was on the first Brighton and Hove knowledge. They said Brighton was one town, Hove was another town, and they became a city, Brighton and Hove City.
Yep.
And you did the knowledge for Brighton, and that covered Dyke Road Avenue was the middle line. Dyke Road Avenue, one side of the road, the houses would be so many hundreds of thousands, the other side would be £10,000 more because it had a Hove address rather than a Brighton address. So I did both, Brighton and Hove. So I was on the first one for that.
You mean you did leave on left seafront, set down on seafront, and that was it?
There's only three directions you can go.
Yeah, the seafront and back again.
East, west and north. you couldn't go south.
That's true.
How long does it take?
5 months.
5 months.
And you're driving to...
It's a long seafront, Dave.
I would say in terms of the standards, it certainly was there. I think it still is. It's one of the highest in the country outside of London.
Yeah.
Are you sure? I mean, I don't know anything about the other standards, well, but I think that's a bold statement.
In England. I know Scotland's got, Edinburgh's got quite a good time.
So bigger than any of the cities, Brighton, which is a seaside town.
Well, for a town, it was a town then. I should think people like, a place like Manchester.
Birmingham, Liverpool, Birmingham, Coventry.
They've got better ones, obviously. But Brighton is amongst the top, the top ten, I would think.
Yeah. So you can't just buy a badge in Brighton, you have to
You buy the licence for the cab.
Yeah.
And they change hands.
I go down to Brighton and I want to be a cab driver. Is there waiting lists?
Don't know. Not at the moment.
So, because there can be, I think, in some of these places, they don't...
Oh, hang on. If you want to buy the cab...
They have a cap.
Yeah, they cap the number of taxis. Mm-hmm. So you buy the cab from another cab driver with a car.
Oh, right. You also then have to do a little bit of a knowledge to be the driver of it.
Oh, yeah, you've got to do the knowledge before.
But I could rent that out to a driver who's already got it.
Yep.
So that's similar to the American system of passing the badge or the medallion on.
Yep, which is what caused Uber to come along.
Mm-hmm. So to recap, the first time you did the knowledge in 1977, how long did that take?
21 months.
21 months. 5 months on the Brighton. We're at 26 months. And how long the second one?
2 years, 5 months, 5 days.
Add that up.
There you go.
So what's the average now?
To be honest with you, I think it's coming down quite quickly. Not because of anything to do with it getting easier, but people are reaching the level quicker, which is all about the numbers. The people that are studying at the moment, because they're so low numbers, are usually the ones that are studying harder.
And full time?
If you're full time, you're definitely going to be around the 2 year mark. Bang on.
Two year, 6 months?
No, I think if you do 2 years, 6 months full time, then you had a little bit of bad luck. Because you get one or two appearances where you had bad luck, that's going to make it 2 years, 6 months. But in general, if you've worked hard and you got it right and you're full time, you're going to be looking at 2 years thereabouts, right on the button.
And when you did it, how long was you on it?
3 days less than 2 years. April 9th, 1990. Normal? No, normal would have been 2 years, 3 months, 5 months, 2 years, 6 months for full timers.
About what I did.
Yeah, and part timers. At that time I was doing it, there were still people there doing it 14 years at that time, which is amazing. Because this is what caused all the knowledge to change, because there was a generation of people that were told, sign on the knowledge. You don't even really have to, you know London, sign on and do the appearances. And they found that the appearances are real. You have to actually be able to be good at something and articulate your route. But they would persevere because they was told, eventually they pass you out. And to be honest, they did kind of. But you could be there for 13, 14 years and there was lots of people from that generation that did that. And it meant that the numbers on the knowledge was enormous. There were 6,000 people on knowledge because they could sign on for free and just do it.
And that's why they brought in the map tests.
Yes. And actually...
It filtered them out.
It filtered them out too well over time once the Uber situation kicked in. And that's when they should have reversed policy and... allowed a kind of a flood again, because they had no one to examine. There's no one actually on the knowledge at all.
What I don't get, in my first time, 21 months, we had one guy took 9 months, but he was literally on a cycle, day in, day out, 7 days a week, going around everywhere, looking at everything. He was brilliant. 21 months is about average for that first time. 2.5 years second time because the map test was in it. Nowadays, people are not even putting for map test until they've done all the runs. So that's 12 months gone before you even start.
That's it. They've got to follow a pattern that's going to get them through quickly, which is that my pattern would be you've got to do 16 runs a week. You finish this part in 6 months. You're going to be on the written test around about 7, 8, 9 month mark. And as you get past that, you're on appearances. And if you score straight Cs, it's a year on appearances. Yep. So if you have some bad luck, you've still got space to be at 2 year mark. And if you have several stages of bad luck, you're at 2.5 years, which makes the knowledge reasonable, but they don't power.
Trouble is
this.
A lot of them will wait and to even put in for the map test. They're actually ready, but they don't realise they're ready.
Well, they believe they're never ready, don't we? So
this has happened with Steve Bappman. He waited and waited and waited. Yep. And said, you've got to do this. And in the end, he said to me, well, okay, I don't believe you're right, but I'm going to do it to stop you turning around and saying I told you so.
Yeah.
And that was it. So
I think you always feel like that. You're never good enough.
Of course you do.
No, yeah. The idea is you've got to be on appearances. If you're not on appearances, you're nowhere. And someone actually quoted me that saying, let's put quotes Dean Warren, and if you're not on the appearances, you're nowhere.
Well, you're not on the knowledge, are you?
No. And it's better to be on appearances, just for those that want to know, it's better to be on appearances getting Ds than it is to not be on appearances and getting nothing. Because with the Ds, you're at least getting the idea of this is nerve-wracking. You're taking some experience back from that that you can correct and keep moving on from. So no matter how great you could be outside of the knowledge, outside of appearances, when you start appearances, you might find you're failing anyway because you've now got the hurdle of, I can't do this. This is a pressure situation.
The sheer pressure you get, the adrenaline in your body. I mean, how many times have you been up there? You come away afterwards and you're totally and utterly drained.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
And that feeling when you actually get the badge, euphoria.
Yeah.
You end up shaking because the adrenaline has come out of your body.
Relief, it's over.
Yeah.
I used to go home and go to sleep after nearly every appearance.
I used to go to the pub.
Mike, it's always wonderful to see you. And we've been, I'd say we've been friends for 20 years nearly.
Yeah, give or take a bit.
Yeah, you've been a pain in the ass every one of those years. And as you point out yourself, you are cantankerous. You are many of those long, big words that you could say that come from your posh background that I can't repeat.
Posh. Dragged up in the valleys, I was, mate.
Charlton.
That's the valley.
Anyway, thank you, Mike.
Tidy down there, see, tidy.
Yeah, of course, he was a bloody
valley boy. I am originally.